Support for Soul on Ice, the podcast, is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Big news, my friend. Manscaped just released their new cologne scent to help you feel good and smell good all over and at all times. Who knew smelling this good could feel this good as well? Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. Join the movement for all your below-the-waist grooming needs. Everyone knows Manscaped has the perfect package 3.0 for all your below-the-waist grooming needs, but they didn't stop there. Complete your grooming game with the new refined cologne signature scent by Manscaped. With the same signature scent that's in all the Manscaped formulas, this cologne is a perfect complement to the collection. Light, approachable, and gentlemanly in all the right ways. This is it. Think of it as your wingman for the night to keep you fresh and ready for just about anything. Calming and inviting, this signature scent introduces a light citrus burst before settling in to a masculine finish. This 50 ml spray cologne is even cruelty-free, dye-free, and 100% vegan. They've got a beautiful design glass bottle that makes a statement, and the manly scent is attractive to set the mood. Also, be sure to check out the Perfect Package 3.0 with all the essentials for your below-the-waist grooming needs, including the Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer and crop formulations. Yes, I'm talking about deodorant and toner to keep your... Well, you know what I'm talking about. Keep them nice. And now you can use the new Manscaped Refined Cologne to complete the set and smell great anytime, anywhere. It's time to feel sexy, my friends. Get 20% off and free shipping with the promo code SOUL. That's S-O-U-L at manscaped.com. Your boys below and your body will thank you. Now let's start the show.
Nice. Soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. Thank you for listening to the show. You are now rocking with the best. Whenever, wherever you're listening to us, we really appreciate you. Week 3 of Black History Month, and today we are celebrating with some great history. 20 years ago, the Edmonton Oilers became the first team to have 5 Black players on one squad. And yes, it really shouldn't be a big deal, but for a young Black hockey fan, that was something. When you saw it, it blew your mind. So joining us on the show are 3 of those guys out of the 5: Joaquin Gage, Sean Brown, and making his second appearance on the show, Big George LaRocque. But first, as always, we give a big shout out to Brother B, our Minister of Social Information. You can see his work on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Check out our pages. He's always holding us down, and we are holding it down now officially on the NHL Network. So make sure on Fridays around 4:30, 4:45, you'll see me on NHL Network giving some recaps of the show. But, we've got to talk about Double Trouble being in the house. As always, my nephews, Akil Thomas, Elijah Roberts, and at the top of the show, I said we were going to address it. Akil, man, dang it. Why are you looking
like Patrick Mahomes, bro? You look like Patrick Mahomes.
What's with the sunglasses, bro?
You see, I've made a couple of decisions in the last couple of days that I'm not proud of, so I didn't want to face Elijah face to face today.
Do we want to elaborate that on that? Well, okay, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. First, I'd like to say, Elijah, did you listen to the Queens? They took over the show last week, brother.
First of all, before I get into the Queens, Akil, we might have to address what you meant by the some problems you had to face over the last couple of days, because the last couple of days were Valentine's Day. So I hope you weren't out there breaking no hearts. But okay. The Queens, they went crazy. I was listening to it, and I wasn't sure how it was gonna go, and they went on and absolutely killed it. Blake kind of took the lead. She's been on the show a couple times, so she knew what she was doing. But just some of the things they were talking about, like the fact that Soria raised $27,000 for the Black Hockey Girl scholarship. And I didn't really know that she was a painter before. Yeah. Sarah talking about the Barbie that she had that sold out. So it's just pretty cool to hear their voices, and they talked about a lot of pretty interesting things.
Yeah, they're really awesome. They held it down, and big shout out once again to Soraya Tinker, Blake Bolden, Sarah Nurse, and Kelsey Kozler. Kiana Scott was supposed to be on that show as well. Akil, you remember Kiana Scott, right? You remember Kiana?
Yeah, I remember. Yep.
She was supposed to be on the show, and she couldn't make it, but we'll have to get her back on the show again. Elijah, there's some huge... Oh, did you want to say anything?
Yeah, no. I feel like I'm you saying this, but I felt like they did hold it down. They did a pretty good job. They're doing some pretty cool stuff if you think about it. Like really, really big stuff, and a lot of stuff to put into perspective, because obviously, you know, I'm a Black hockey player, but I'm male. So as a female, and being Black, they faced even more, you know, challenges and hurdles and stuff. So it's kind of cool to kind of hear their perspective on stuff and to see the stuff that they are kind of doing these days. It's awesome to hear. And it was a really good job by them. I was impressed.
And like Blake's got her new stick out. Soraya is painting. Kelsey is coaching, you know, university hockey, and you know, and of course Sarah's doing her thing, and you know, the Barbie thing is really cool. And on top of that Queens episode, we had the Queen of All Queens, Angela James, on the show, which was super awesome to just hear about her life, growing up in Flemington Park here in Toronto, and becoming one of the most dominant females to play the game of hockey, and one of the first females inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. But speaking more specifically, Elijah, on the growth of the game of hockey, there's some huge news that I know you want to share with us about minor hockey here in Toronto.
Yeah, before we get on to that, before we leave the Queens, I wanted to mention that Sarah made her debut on Sportsnet. I don't know if you guys saw, but she absolutely killed that. And I don't know if that's a permanent thing, but she looked real good out there. And I kind of hope she keeps that going. But with the minor hockey, I was watching, and I saw that John Tavares and Sam Gagne purchased the Toronto Marlboros, where both Akil and I played. So, you know, you got to know, they got some big plans for that franchise. It's already probably the most storied franchise in all of minor hockey. I mean, people can argue that, but if you look at some of the talent they've produced, like McDavid, Tavares, they've produced a lot of like world-class talent. So, you know, I think they got some big things going there. And just as a player, like, I think if you like, there's some parents who let their kid pick where they play, or even parents might be influenced, but if they see like John Tavares owns the team, it might kind of make them want to play for the Marlies a little bit more than if it was just somebody else owning the team. So,
but there's a lot of news. There's a lot of politics in minor hockey.
Oh, so much politics.
Do you think that the politics are going to be ramped up because now everybody's going to want to play for these guys, like their team? Like, is it going to get uglier, do you think, or is there a way for it to be, equal for all, I guess?
I don't think so, just because as professional players themselves, like, I don't think they're going to be involved enough to for it to get to that point. Like, they just own the team. I think it's going to be ran the exact same way as it was. It's just decisions are being made from up top from a different person, so... Like, owners don't decide who makes the team and stuff like that. Obviously, there's definitely some young kids who are going to want to play for the Marlies now, but every kid wants to play for the Marlies anyways. So,
right. Nathaniel Adams, big shout out to Nathaniel Adams. He plays for them right now, and I hear he's killing it. So, that's really awesome. Elijah, I think we got to talk about this guy in his sunglasses on a podcast. I know he's in L.A.
I got to know the story behind it. I mean, he tried to duck the story. I even tried to throw a shot at him, and he didn't take it. The story. So
Akil,
usually when Akil won't tell me the story, it's something It's a story worth hearing.
Yeah.
I've been in LA for a few months now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we have practice every day, but we come home and it's nice out. Bought this bad boy a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, acoustic guitar. Love it.
Acoustic guitar. Yeah. And it was Valentine's Day yesterday. So
yes.
I've been playing the last few months to try to be able to play a song. And I made a song yesterday, actually, for this girl. And it was for Elijah's girlfriend, actually. Called You Could Do Better With Me.
Mm.
And she really liked it. That's why I'm just upset. I can't really look at Elijah right now. Yeah, it just, yeah.
Can we hear some of the lyrics?
Yeah, if she really liked it, I mean, I think maybe this could be a big time song. Maybe you should share with the people.
Maybe you should share some of those lyrics.
You know what? It was more of like a private type of thing. It was meant for like her heart and no one else's, right?
Mm.
So, yeah.
Is it now, Elijah? I'm thinking because you're like the big brother here. Do you feel like this is kind of like the little brother, a little jealous of the big brother? So he's trying to be very conniving and very vindictive and trying to scoop in where he shouldn't be scooping.
You know, I thought I raised a kill better than this. And, mm-hmm. you know, my girlfriend did leave for about an hour yesterday and I didn't know where she went.
Okay.
So
do you think she was listening to?
I didn't think Akil would stab me in the heart like this. Not even in the back, like in the heart.
Heart. So, did you wear the sunglasses when you were singing this song?
No, I took them off.
You took them off.
Didn't want to hit her in the face with them.
Yeah, right. You just wanted to be direct. You wanted to pierce into her eyes. So you feel like she liked the song?
I know she liked the song.
Okay. How is your guitar playing? How is the guitar playing going? How is that going?
All jokes aside, it's actually it's pretty tough. I bought my dad a bass a few years ago, and he always talked about wanting to play it and wanting to play it so bad. And so I finally bought him one, and he kind of tried it out a few times and kind of gave up. And he was just explaining that like it's very, very hard, and you kind of have to do it like, you know, very often for a long time to kind of get the hang of it. And so yeah, I've been trying to do like because I'm obviously a beginner, it's hard to kind of do it for a long time because I just kind of get frustrated, my hands get sore, it's like it's kind of annoying.
Yeah, but I just
try to chip in any day I can, just because I feel like it's kind of a cool skill to have. And maybe one day Elijah's girlfriend won't be scared to leave him for me.
So, I mean, we'll give you the benefit of the doubt because you just started playing, but in the near future, can we, if get not something. That song, can we get something?
Something. Like, you know, you came and told us that you were taking Spanish lessons. When we asked you to do some Spanish, you didn't want to give us some Spanish. Then you're in Germany, you're taking some German. You don't even, now you get to, like, come
I'm
on,
starting
man.
I think he's just a very good storyteller.
I think
honest.
So.
Hey, you don't watch movies for free, do you? You got to pay, right?
How is the Ontario rain going? How are you feeling out there? You got your first goal, didn't you? How was that?
Yeah. Speaking of that, so obviously we gave our top five songs the other day.
Yes.
You put a song in, I think it was called Shot Flow or something like that by Busta Rhymes or something. Shot of Flow.
Oh, Slow Flow.
Slow Flow, right.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to really take the time to apologize for myself for even giving it a chance. I did give it a chance. And
what happened?
I was driving my car to the rink, and uh-huh. this song came on. It was on my game day playlist, and I was just so sorry for myself. I was just like, wow, like, what's really going on right now?
Right.
And we ended up losing that game.
Wow.
So I was like, whatever, like, I'll give it another shot. I only listened to like 10 seconds of it. Okay. So maybe 20 seconds will do. Mm-hmm. Obviously lost that game again.
Mm. So it's two games you lost.
Yeah, I gave it 30 seconds. And then we lost that one too.
Okay, So when you scored a goal, what song did you listen to?
Yeah, that was the game I didn't listen to it.
Okay, so basically what you're trying to say is...
You know what I'm trying to say.
No, I want to hear you say it.
Do better.
Do better.
I was expecting better, but I will give Elijah the compliment to say that his song was good. It was Invincible by Pop Smoke, I think, right?
Or, yes, sir.
Yeah, that was really good. That got me fired up. So
okay. All right. I'll get you. I'll get you a tough one.
We're 0-5 right now. It's tough. We're really close. Like, I think like three of the games, I think we're kind of winning, and then they tied it late in the game, like against San Diego. They scored to win with 4.6 seconds left. Like last two games, we tied the game, and then literally the next shift, they score the game winner. So we're just young, going through some growing pains, and we have a lot of talent though, so we'll be okay. But obviously, that first win is like, it's like it feels impossible right now, just with things going kind of weird. But we'll get right back on it, and we've been playing games like every other day, so kind of have to flip the page pretty fast and get after it the next day. So,
all right.
Kwame, with me giving Akil a good song, me getting Vegas right, me getting the World Juniors right, we haven't had a show since the Super Bowl.
What you did get the Super Bowl right. You did get the Super Bowl.
Remember what I said
was
going to happen?
Yes.
So
you did.
I just wanted to quickly point those things out. I might need to maybe quit hockey and go on ESPN or Sportsnet, because I think I'm pretty damn good at this. And
picking them, you can pick
I them. Might even make another bold prediction and say Ontario Reign are going to find their first win soon.
How many games? The next three games. Two games, next game.
Who's your next game against the kill?
Colorado.
Colorado.
He's thinking
in Colorado or at home?
At home, I believe.
I think they're going to win.
Okay.
You heard it here first.
All right, man.
Okay.
Oh, like God. I thought you mean Colorado. I was about to snuff you, but thank you. No. Okay, cool. I guess we'll win.
Okay.
I ran into Wardo the other day. He was practicing the scratch players in Henderson. We were on a road trip in Vegas, and it was so funny. The Henderson Golden Knights, their rink is literally like attached to a casino. Like when we pulled up, it was like a huge casino. Like, what the hell is the most Vegas rink I've ever seen? It was nuts, but it was cool seeing him. And he said to me was how your face-offs been. He didn't even say hi. I'm like, been pretty good. He's like, yeah, I know, I've been watching. And luckily his centerman waxed me all night, so thanks.
Really?
Yeah,
you have to counter that. I got a really cool message from our Soul on Ice podcast Facebook page from Bill McGregory. And I wanted to get you guys' thoughts quickly on this before we get to our guest of honor. Bill writes, I was wondering if you guys can talk about building ice rinks in the Black community. I think if we do that, we can take so many kids off the streets, give them something new in their lives. The game has really taken off with African Americans, with the players. But we need ice rinks in the Black community. I am a 60-year-old African-American male. I grew up in Chicago learning the game on my own, didn't have any ice rinks in the community, had to go outside my community to play this game. If we had ice rinks in our community, like we do basketball courts, there would be more African-Americans in the league right now. I am still playing men's hockey. It's a great sport. I love the game. We have to do this. We have to invest in our communities. And if we want to see change in the game, this is what we need to do. Thank you very much. And thank you for listening. Akil, you go first, then Elijah. Thoughts?
Yeah, I would say it's not really a matter of, having hockey rinks in certain communities, in my opinion, because, you know, there's going to be rinks kind of somewhere where you are, I believe. If you're in Toronto, there's a rink 10 minutes.
We're talking the United States. A lot different.
Okay. But I just feel like the main focus is reducing the cost of hockey because, yeah, we can put a rink in your neighborhood, but are you going to be able to pay $1,000 for skates, a couple hundred for a helmet, a couple hundred for gloves, sticks, everything like that? Like, it's not, I don't think it's a matter of actually having rinks in certain communities. It's just about getting everyone involved and like making it, you know, accessible for kids and having, you know, camps that are cheap for beginners and having, you know, people donate equipment to kids and donate ice time and all that stuff. I think that's kind of where we kind of need to pay attention to a little bit first. And then we can build on, you know, putting rinks where maybe there should be, because we know there's a demand there, right? You can't build a rink if you have no idea if someone's going to use it, right? So.
I kind of disagree with Akil a little bit there. I think if this guy was from Toronto, I think it would be a very different conversation. But in Chicago, it's all football, basketball, baseball, anything really other than hockey. So I find it hard to believe that they have a lot of rinks out there. And I think just looking over the past 20 years, like, hockey equipment has actually gotten cheaper. Some of it's gotten more expensive, but you can go to Walmart and get a stick. You can get gloves. There's places where you can rent skates, or maybe you save up to get an affordable pair of skates. But if there's somewhere where they can go 5 minutes down the street and play hockey, then maybe they invest a little bit to get those skates. But if the closest hockey, see people get involved in the game, and it just makes it a little bit harder for like a young kid after school to want to play hockey, especially with African-Americans. Like, maybe if their parents are working and there's no way for them to get to a rink that's far away. So I don't want to say necessarily they do need more. I haven't been to Chicago and really went around to see all the rinks, but I do think it is definitely a lot different than it is here in Toronto. Here you can find a rink anywhere, really. There's rinks Brampton, Toronto, any city, whereas I find in Chicago, you're probably not going to find too many.
All right. Well, thank you, Bill, for your question. And if you guys have any questions you want us to answer, you can go to our Facebook fan page, Soul on Ice, the podcast. You can also go and hit us up on Twitter, Instagram, DM us, ask whatever you want, and we'll make sure we answer that for you. If anybody wants to request a song from Akil to play on his guitar, please ask us and we'll make sure that he gets on that. All right. Ex-Oilers, Sean Brown, Joaquin Gage, and George LaRocque, they are here to talk about being a part of history 20 years ago. And this is going to be dope. So thank you for joining us, and give us a few seconds. We'll be right back. Our next guest became part of history and they didn't even know it. And to be honest, it wasn't a big deal to them because they all just wanted to play for the City of Champions and play in the NHL. 20 years ago, George LaRocque, Anson Carter, Joaquin Gage, Sean Brown, and Mike Greer played for the Edmonton Oilers, making that team the first in NHL history to have five Black players on one squad. Joining us today to speak about that historic time is Sean Brown, Joaquin Gage, and the big man, George LaRocque. Welcome, fellas. Thank you for rocking with the best. How is everybody doing today?
I'm good, man. This is great. Good to see George. I see Brownie too much, but that's okay.
It's still good to see you, Gager.
Awesome to see you. Awesome to see everyone. And, you know, those are the years that we'll never forget.
Right. I wanted to start off by saying this Friday, we are going to share more of you guys' story when Sportsnet airs my documentary, Soul on Ice, Past, Present, and Future at 7 p.m. Eastern, which features each of you guys. And I really appreciate you guys being on the film for me. It's still playing. It's still getting a lot of love. Now, Joaquin, you had one of the best quotes, and it always gets a laugh wherever we show the film. when you speak about the crew, do you remember what you said? You basically were saying that it wasn't really five black players on one team.
I know exactly what you were saying, buddy. That's Sean and I, we come from interracial families. So we always said there was just half. So there was only four black guys on the team. Because Sean and I are both half, but it's the proper half. So it's good. It was all good, man. That's what a time that was with everyone. I was fortunate to play with both these clowns in the minors as well. So I think that was a fun time as well. George could hardly speak a lick of English. It was torture because he was my roommate at times too. That was really bad, but it was a really great time, man. And I talked about it a little bit before. We all didn't realize what we were in, you know, like what it actually meant. I just remember the one time in St. Louis when I picked up a USA Today, and of course you go straight to that sports page, and there it was, just all of us on the front of that sports page in St. Louis, and five black people of color on one team. It was, and it wasn't kind of till that point I was like, wow, that's pretty cool, because the USA Today was kind of, you know, it's a big, huge paper. Mm-hmm. I remember just showing it to a bunch of guys, and it was like, it was pretty cool, pretty cool.
And I guess my question to you, George, was, did you realize that this was something different, or when did you realize this was something different in the NHL?
To be honest with you, I only realized it when the media started to pick it up, because once you make it to the NHL, it's so hard, the road to be there, it's so hard that once you get to a team, you see people coming from all over the place that are on your team, and the goal is to win, to go to war, right? And me, I was into obviously another reality because I was a fighter. So in terms of all the brothers on the team, you know, the media in Edmonton really started to pick it up because of the Eskimos. Sometimes I remember Terry Jones made a joke calling us the Eskimos team because we had five black players. But, you know, when I think of it now, like back then when the media started to open up and talking about it, I realized that how it was important, because we knew about Willie O'Ree, but what we were doing, it was kind of like, in a way, I could understand why some people thought that, is this going to be a new trend? Are we going to see more black players in the NHL? Because I think from then on, the number went down a bit. Mm-hmm. But once you're playing, the historical thing, I didn't think about it so much. And I didn't realize it so much. Now I do. The fact that what it was, 20% of the league NHL black players were on that team. You know, when you think about it, it's astonishing. But I have to be honest that back then, you know, I was worried enough about playing and who I had to fight against with. So I never realized how big what we were all doing was.
Sean, was there a different type of relatability to each of the other four players that you were playing with compared to the rest of the dynamic on the team for you?
You know what? There was always, because there wasn't a whole lot of players of color growing up, you know, when you did see someone, I felt a connection to them for sure. And so Gager and LaRocque, George and Anson and Greer, you know, we all definitely had a connection. And there was a special bond. I was happy. I was proud to be able to be on a team and in a dressing room with guys that were similar to me, for sure. But like George said, I mean, it wasn't until, you know, probably during the month of February, and it was Black History Month, that there wasn't, you know, we're trying to fight to try and stay in the league. And it wasn't until this month that usually there was, you know, a lot of attention brought to our team. And then it became more real. You talked about it, but you know, there's still a connection every time I see these guys, or I see someone of color. You know, it makes me proud, and my eyes go right to them. And I think there's a sense of, I think there's a connection between anyone that are similar to us, for sure.
So I played with Elijah in the OHL for the Ace Dogs for a few years. And he was just the type of guy where, you know, you knew if you're going to be at the rink at 10:30, his car was pulling at 10:28 and he was sprinting to the room. He would eat Skittles for pregame meal. He would just kind of show up wearing the same thing he wore the last few days. That's just the type of guy he was. So can you guys kind of explain what type of guys you guys were within your team? And George, you can start first.
Well, you know, the type of guys that we were, guys know that I was a kid in a man's body. You know, I was always joking around. And I had to, because of the job that I had was so stressful that off the ice, I had to keep things light and I had to laugh and joke around with everyone. So, but you know, there's one thing that Sean said that I totally agree with him is as much as I would joke around and often when I did that and I laugh all the time, it was actually to hide my anxiety, because with the job that I had, you never wanted to show that I was afraid and I never wanted to show that I was worried, because if I was worried about, you know, who I was going to get in a fight with, into my teammates would be more horrified. So there was a big, to me, there was a big wall that I had to hide those bad feelings when I got into fights. But I know with Sean, because with Sean, especially we, like Sean fought too. And we knew what the job and the pressure was. And I saw him sometimes, even him sometimes, you know, getting into that trance. I remember one time I was hurt and I wasn't playing and the others was playing Washington and he mixed it up with Chris Simon. So, and the fact that Joachim and all those guys were there, it was all, like, think about it, like playing the NHL and your roommate is black. The connection I had with these guys while I was composing with pressure and everything was awesome, because we all share our stories, the struggle that we've been through to make it to the NHL. And I was proud of them because they didn't have to tell me all the details, but I know the road for them to making it there was much harder than any other minority or black kids that would have made it to the NHL. So I connect with them a lot. And we joked around all the time because we knew what we had to do to be there. And on top of that, with Sean, because he was a fighter, because being black is one thing to making it there, but being a fighter is an extra pressure that you have into yourself that is much harder, especially when you're a physical guy. And that's why with all this anxiety and the pressure that I had, I needed to joke around and to do other things so I don't think about the fight. I don't think about the anxiety, about all that stuff. Otherwise, I would have went crazy, because I did this for a long time. And, you know, I never took drugs, alcohol, anything, steroids. I've always been healthy. And I think that my joyful environment that I've always was on was helping me out a lot doing my job.
George was too joyful at times. Like, I remember him hiding behind the door of the hotel room. And as I came in, and then he would jump on me, pick me up and body slam me on the bed. Like, just, yeah, it was awful. He was probably the worst roommate I ever had. He was just terrible. And even Brownie, we roomed together too, actually. Brownie, we were roommates as well. So Brownie was a little quieter, didn't have to worry about a 260-pound black man picking me up and throwing me down. But yeah, George was just, like he said, just a big, big, huge kid and just wanted to play all the time. It was hilarious. But it's both these guys. George was kind of the bull in the china shop. I remember him just like he'd be walking somewhere and you'd almost have to get out of the way in the dressing room. Like, he was just straight A to B. You know, Sean was a little bit more reserved in the dressing room. I like pretty quiet and stuff. I was quiet too. I was
Sean. Sean looks like he was like the R&B singer of the group. You know, if you guys were a boy band, he would be the lead singer.
Hey, we had a lot of fun. Like, you talk about George. I mean, George was a gigantic part of the Oilers and any team that he played on, obviously with the role that he had. If George wasn't loose, or George was scared or showed that he was scared, Gager, you'd probably agree with me, we would all been scared.
Right? Yeah. So, oh yeah. If he was scared. I mean,
yeah. George took care of us all. And I'm very thankful to have played with him. I mean, he made it easy for all of us. And like George said, I don't think a lot of people understand the pressure and the anxiety that comes along with what he did. And the fact that, you know, he did keep it loose. I mean, the dress room, or the, I guess the hockey environment is a very
high pressure environment to be in. And I think we all kind of fed off of each other and our ability to just laugh. I mean, I get along. I see these guys quite often at different events, and that's all we do is we laugh and we talk about the old times. We want to have a good time. And I think that was important that George was George, because it kept everything loose. You know, because that, like I said, that environment sometimes can be quite stressful. So, you know, I definitely enjoyed being around these guys because of their personality and their ability to just be human and just have a good time and show that side of them.
So Elijah and I kind of have a friend group of Black hockey players who just kind of hang out all the time and stuff. And I always get chirped for being, you know, the least cultured in the chat. Who is that guy on the Oilers?
The least cultured?
Culture.
Who's the one who's listening to country music when they should be listening to a little Ice Cube?
Oh, no one.
Our music selection was actually quite tough for quite a while.
Remember, guys, how we used to fight when they were putting country music and
on
the radio? We were going nuts. We hated it. Yeah. We did not like it.
How are you guys getting fired up with this stuff going? That was the only reason.
How do I fight listening to Shania Twain? Are you kidding me?
That was the only year that the music was good in a dressing room. I swear, that was the only year where it was all right. And you know, everyone liked it because everyone was bopping their heads.
Yeah, well, Sliver played a big part in that, right? Yeah, we used to have to be there, 2 hours before? I'd get there almost 3 hours just so I could listen to my music. And Sliver was about the only guy that enjoyed it because I know the trade. I remember Kenny Lowe and Barry Stafford and those guys, they would quite often give me jobs and sometimes shut it off and try and put their music on.
They did. And actually, guys, you remember, guys, I'm not even going to repeat the words, but you remember what Sparky said once when we put the music? Shut down that music. You remember that once?
Yeah.
There's one time Sparky said that, and it was a long time ago then, but still. I know it was getting on their nerve, the raps and stuff, but still, it was still a good time. Times are different now, but back then, man, we stood our ground and we still find ways to put it on.
That's how old you know we are, because we were actually bringing CDs into the room.
George, you often talk about being able to share stories with the other guys of color and its importance. How much did you appreciate that time with the guys, and how did the media deal with you guys more specifically? Did it get irritating after a while?
To be honest with you, it was fine. You know, the media, when they start talking about it in the months of February, they talk like it was never too much, right? It's not like I said, when they start talking about it, we realize that more what we're doing, that it could be historical, but it wasn't annoying at all. You know, it was awesome to talk about the fact that, you know, it was the first time in NHL history that 5 Black guy on a team. But other than that, to me, it was not even that. It's just the fact that I saw 4 other guys that to be in the NHL, they went to war, just like I did. Mm-hmm. All the obstacles, everything that I've been through, those guys, they understand what I've been through because they've been through the same. And I admired each one of them even more because, you know, like, I know how hard it was. Look at Sean Brown, you know, the 6 defensemen per team. He made to be one of them. It's hard to be in that position because you have less guy to fight with to have a job in the NHL. Gager, there's 2 goalies per team in the NHL. The 30 teams. So there's one of the 60 job, and he made it, and he's Black. So it's even harder for him. And, you know, each one of us, the way that they made it, it was remarkable because to beat the odds, to be a defenseman like Sean Brown was, to be a goalie like Gager was, to be an excellent forward like Mike Greer and Anson Carter was, that he had to battle against skill guys. All these guys on top of being Black, they had to beat the us to be where they are. And that's why I just talk. Sometimes we didn't even talk about or what we've been through because we didn't have to. We all knew that. I knew what they've been through. So I don't have to talk about all the struggle. Just talking to them and just feeling normal and talking to guys that I saw that they weren't affected by what happened in their youth, it was just awesome. And I recognized that what they did was remarkable, and I recognized how much they were role models to kids that wanted to be future defenseman in the NHL, a young black kid that wanted to be a goalie, that wanted to be walking gauge. I recognize all what they brought to the game that was going to inspire other kids to want to play.
I thought our media was great. I mean, at the time we all came in the league, remember, we didn't charter at the beginning, right? We flew commercial. So all of the media, you know, we spent a lot of time with each other on the road and at airports and so on. So I don't know how you guys felt when I played on other teams. There was never a connection like I had to the media like I did in Edmonton. And I thought it was great that they wanted to, everybody was respectful, and the fact that they wanted to hear our story or tell our story was only going to make it better. Because, you know, we all grew up watching, you know, whether it was Grant Fuhr or Tony McKegney or whoever it was. And I just thought, wow, this is awesome that they're going to be able to tell our story and someone else is going to be able to relate to us at some point too.
Mm.
The realization that maybe, like, it doesn't it happens now sometimes, like you'll get a guy that I'd met years and years ago that I signed an autograph for in Edmonton, and he comes up, he goes, you know, it was so cool to see that you guys, that team, and you guys had made it, and you, when you're in it, you don't realize it, right? And I at that point I go, God, just Grant Fuhr must get this on a daily basis, you know, of so many people coming up to him and saying, oh my gosh, I couldn't believe I wanted to be you. And I was one of those people, you know, and to have that effect on someone else is really quite powerful. And even though you don't even know what you're doing, and having someone look up to you in that regard and thinking that, oh, you know what, I can do this too. That's a very rewarding feeling to have.
Back when I played summer hockey, I played on a team called the Skilled Black Aces, and it was made of a bunch of black players from different teams, and we got together, played 3 or 4 tournaments a summer, and when I look back, it's probably the most fun I've had playing summer hockey. Just like even after the game, instead of all the parents going, let's go to Subway, they would say, let's go get some oxtail or jerk chicken and in the room instead of listening to Akil's country music. We're listening to reggae and rap music. So I just want to know, how was that different for you guys than playing on a team where you were the only black guy?
Well, I think, you know how, like, most of the guys I played with were white, right? So growing up, it was predominantly a white team. And as a person of who looked different and a person of color, right, there, you know how you would go into a room sometimes and you would feel, though, here comes the joke, or here comes this something else, or someone's about to say something that's, you know, really offside. And that was the best part. Now, not that any of those guys would say anything, because I think it was the furthest point of their mind, but it was just, that made it, like, feel like such a safe environment that you didn't have to worry about that type of thing, right? That ugly head, racism head to come out of nowhere. And that was a real safe feeling, I think, for all of us. That's why we probably didn't even realize what we were in. I mean, I talked to Craig McTavish, the coach, about, did he ever realize what had transpired and how having 5 people of color on the team? And he said, Gager, I didn't really even notice. It wasn't a main focal point. We wanted to win. We were a good team. That fact, he said, we're in Canada. We don't pay attention to that type of thing. And that was kind of nice of him to say, you know, like, he didn't look at us any different. We were part of a group of guys just trying to be the best.
When Elijah got traded to my team, you know, it just seemed like, you know, we were gonna be boys no matter what. I was just waiting for him to ask me to come over and play NHL or something like that. What did you guys kind of do to kind of hang out, and what did you guys do in your time away from the rink?
Well, we were all together at a pretty good time of our life, I think, as far as, you know, I think you guys would say the same thing. As far, you know, I didn't have a girlfriend at the time. Gager, did you?
No.
Yeah, George, you didn't.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. George had lots. So,
George had a bunch. You know,
so I think we actually, I think we all kind of came in at a really fun time of our life. And the majority of guys that we played with were very similar. We were all young, pretty much, you know, single guys that were, you know, living out a dream. And so we had nothing but time to go out. That's all we did was play hockey and get together and go out for drinks and kind of hang out. So you know, people quite often ask me, well, what was the best city that you played in? And at, you know, playing in a Canadian city, number one is probably the best, just because it's our game and the amount of attention that it gets. But it was also good because of where we're all at in our life, and the fact that you know, when I played on other teams, I got married and wind up having kids, and my life had changed. And you know, you're just at a different point in your life. But we, you know, we were out all the time buying the tub. What do we call that? By the tub.
By the tub. Yeah.
You know, so you know, we had some pretty special times because of that.
Elijah, you hear that?
Well, yeah, I heard it all. You know, we both had girlfriends when we were in Niagara, so.
Do we even want to go there, boys?
Yeah.
No, that's a long
that's for another cast.
That's for another podcast.
Each year after 2000, 2001, slowly, that you guys being five went four, then three, then two, then one. George, you're the last guy left on the team. How did that feel going from five to one?
To be honest with you again, it's not something that I really look into. It's, you always sad when you see some guys go to other teams because, you know, you built a friendship with them. But if the friendship, that the bond that you have with a guy that you go to war with, it's a friendship you have for life. But I looked at it more as a friendship that I had with them as the color, as, you know, one of my brother, a color, just left. You know, it was my friend that we went to war with that we had so much fun with and stuff. And it was sad to see him go, just like it would be sad to see any other teammate that would leave, right? So with this color thing, I'd be lying if I'd say that, you know, it hurts more when a player of color leaves than another player, right? Because to me, everybody was the same. Of course, you have different affinity with a player of color that because of the road, what we've been through. But at the same time, you know, when I end up being the only one, I didn't even notice that. I didn't even see that. I knew they were still in the league somewhere. And, you know, I was wishing him well, but other than that, to me, it didn't change the fact that I still had the job to do. I was still a fighter, and whether people were gone or coming or gone, my job was as stressful as it was in the beginning. And man, and that's what I was worrying about, but not about, you know, if I was the only guy or not, because to me, it didn't change anything in terms of what I was doing.
You guys remember any of the music you guys used to listen to before games?
I had a play. Shaggy was pretty big at the time, so I had a couple of his songs that I like to listen to when I get there. When I got there early, like I mentioned earlier, Sliver, who was one of the trainers, was into a lot of the same similar music. So quite often he put on his playlist. But that was early on in our career. Like I said, I didn't have full control over the stereo. Until later on in my career. So I had to get there before the veterans got there, before they put on their style of music.
Sean and Gager, I know you both have put in a lot of your free time working with kids in Edmonton. How is that going? And, you know, what's happening out in the community of Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, as far as getting these kids on the ice? Are you guys doing anything in the space of trying to make it more inclusive for kids of color?
I'm doing some stuff with the First Shift program. And it's inclusive to all, trying to get low income families, kids that have never played before. We did, you obviously saw on Hockey Day in Canada, just trying to be, being bringing people that don't get maybe a chance to play hockey. Let's face it, it's a tough sport to play with the amount of stuff to get on. I mean, some of these kids, I think they came through the bus to get to the outdoor rink, you know. And so just things like that, try to get kids involved in the game and being able to help them with equipment and things like that, right? So I know there's the Dave Semenko project as well, trying to get gear and stuff to kids that that families maybe can't afford it too. So we've all been part of that as well. So just trying to help out those lower income families to help get their kids out there and have some fun.
Mm. Sean, how's things going with you?
It's good. I mean, I do lots of development with lots of different kids and kids of all different skill sets. So, you know, I have kids of color that are in my camps that, you know, I love it. I mean, I feel an instant connection to them. I see a lot of myself and a lot of those kids, and I go out of my way to make a connection to every kid, but they're like we talked about earlier. There's definitely a special connection when I see a kid of color in my programs, and like Gager, I mean, I help out with the alumni. We do a number of different events throughout the city. You know, it's unfortunate that that's just the sport that we play. It's not, you know, it's not cheap to play our sport, and you know, not everyone has access or the ability to play it. And it's you know, there would be a lot more kids of all different races that, you know, I wish could play this game, because there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of kids that just don't get the opportunity because of the cost.
Sean, I'm not sure if you know this, but the year you worked with Team Canada at U17 with Team Red, I was on Team White at the time.
Okay.
Of course, we ended up with the gold medal, but you know, don't want to play too hard. But
yeah, I didn't.
What was that experience like for you, and what is it you love so much about coaching and skills work?
Well, that was good because I had an opportunity, obviously, to be a part of that program, and I didn't know anything about it. I played with a guy, Dominic Pittis, that had worked with Team Canada in at the different levels, and he kind of was the one that. We got talking and got me in there. So that was cool. I mean, to be with that many elite athletes, you know, it's always nice to be on the ice with kids that are motivated and driven and have a goal, because you can kind of feed off of each other. And then the coaching staff, you know, there was a lot of hockey knowledge and information that was shared. It was, you know, I thought it was overwhelming for me as an adult. I couldn't imagine what it had been like for you guys. And cause your day was jam packed, right? You guys were on the ice multiple times, and then you had fitness testing, you had nutrition, you had all these different, meetings and information thrown at you. So, it was quite interesting seeing how Hockey Canada, once you get identified and how they, how they work with their players, you know, it was good. I mean, you're always learning. It doesn't matter what level you played at or how much you think you know, you're always learning in this game. And anytime you get an opportunity to get around good people and continue with that, just, you know, it makes you better. And obviously, you know, you're able to share those experiences with kids, you know, to help them get their goal.
So Gager, you played two show games fresh out of the dub. How nervous were you for these games and how they go?
Well, the first game I played was the first lockout year. So our season was actually done and we were just taxi squatting it. We basically went on the ice before everybody, went to go to one of the local golf courses, played about 18 and came back, slept. And there was a game that night. So we came back to the hotel and all of a sudden I got a call from the trainer saying Bill Ranford was hurt. So I raced over to the rink, got half dressed, got out for the last bit of warm up and proceeded to fall as soon as I hit the ice, which was awesome. And then, we all know who Fred Brathwaite is. He was, he was the other goalie there. So Freddie decided not to play that well that game. And so I was a little bit worried because I had a belly full of Arby's and probably a hot dog on nine. sitting in and out in the sun the whole time. And then after the first, Ronnie Lowe, I didn't think he was going to say you're going in, but then as soon as like 10 seconds before we were going out, he said you're in. And we were playing the Leafs and went in there, and it was tough because we had to win that game to we were in a kind of a playoff race. So we were down by a few. I got in there. I let out a couple massive rebounds. I made a couple saves, but I also kicked one way out to Shane Corson. He went down and scored. So I actually got an assist on my first game. So I thought at that point, like they announced my name, the crowd went nuts. I'm thinking to myself, you know what? It's all Conn Smythe and Vezina's from here on out. But no, Matt Sundin decided to blow a few between my legs that game, and played the next game against the Flames. And pretty cool because Theo Fleury, I stopped him on a couple good shots, and he sent a couple expletives my way and goes, "Come on, Gager, let me score." And I'm more happy that he knows my name. You know, that's what I'm happy about. But unbelievable. That's when I knew, oh my gosh, you always hear a guy say, oh, if I could just play one game. The problem with playing one game is you want to play two games, right? And then it's three, four. So really, I wish we could have won a couple of those. We ended up losing, but something I'll never forget.
I've always wondered, like, when you know you're not playing that night, is your kind of routine the exact same? Like you said, you had like Arby's and a hot dog in your stomach. If you were like playing a team that's, let's say they're at the bottom of the standings, you know you're backing up, like would you have that same game day routine, or would you kind of just be chilling?
That was because I wasn't playing. But no, usually I tried to – I mean, it was a maturity thing too. I think as I got older, I realized, look, you got to give yourself the best chance to play, right? So I – tried to treat every game, do this exact same thing I would do as if I was playing. So just to make sure if something happened, I'd be ready to play. It was a little bit more of a maturity thing, like I said, but yeah, it took me a while to learn that a bit. Sometimes when you weren't playing, you just took the whole thing off, and I learned the hard way that wasn't a good way to prepare.
George, you're a guy who's always got his hands in things. Right now you're at your hockey memorabilia shop right now? How's that going?
Well, you know, I'm on the radio, I'm on TV, I have a sports store. I do a lot of stuff, but the stuff that I love the more is I'm a public speaker also. I wrote a book in French and English, my own autobiography, which is bestseller in both languages. And the reason why I wanted to do like Jackie Robinson. He wrote a book that inspired me to pursue my dream to play in the NHL. And he inspired many other Black athletes to play baseball. And I wrote a book to inspire minority that wanted to play hockey. So because of that book, I get invited in a lot of places in Canada and the States to talk to minorities, to different groups about how you beat the odds, how you pursue your dream even though you're a minority. So I love doing that. And I get invited all the time, a keynote speaker, and to do that and stuff, to go all over the place, talk to different communities. And this is the part that I love the most about my life right now, because I get to inspire other kids that are struggling through some, you know, racism. And I could give them advice and finding ways to inspire them to pursue their dreams.
You're also a part of some of the NHL councils going on right now, which is very important work that the league is doing. How do you see the best way of growing the game as it stands right now?
Well, right now we're working on many things in conjunction with the NHL. So there's many, many projects that you guys will be seeing that's going to be coming in an up and coming year, which there's a lot of stuff inclusive to go to minority, to get more minority kids to play hockey, to get in equipment, to bring hockey to them, to get them more interested, to bring also hockey to women, have a viable professional women's league. So there's a lot of things that you guys will be seeing in the coming future that'll be really inspiring, and I'll see more and more minorities and like interested in playing the game that they love.
You guys have all kind of mentioned how when you guys first started off on the same team, you were more just focused on playing and wasn't something you noticed that much. But how long do you think it is before we see five Black players on a team again?
Because technically 2005 was the second time we've seen five black players on a team with the Atlanta Thrashers. And ever since then, we haven't really had that. Like, I think that's a great question from Elijah. If you three can kind of give your predictions on when's the next time you think you'll see five black players playing on one team or even more.
I don't think it'll be too much longer. I mean, you look at Team Canada, like the World Junior team, right? There's all different peak guys coming from all different places. U.S., same thing, you know? Like, so I don't think it'll be too much longer before you see five black players might be a tough. but I like you see here, Kyler Yamamoto, you know, Japanese descent. I think you're just going to see a melting pot of players. I don't think it'll be one race in particular. I would think you would just see a lot more players come from different backgrounds. That'll be maybe like you'll probably see 10 or 15 at that point, right? Mm. Not just you're probably white guys. I think you would see a lot different going forward for sure.
To me, I don't think we're going to see five black players in the same team in the near future, because it's just culturally yet we're not there yet in terms of, you know, seeing more minorities playing the game. I hope there'll be more just in the NHL. If we see more minorities playing in the NHL, that's a start. But, you know, to see five again in the same team, it would be, just be a luck of the draw within the next 10 years, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have a date or a time, but I mean, I do like the fact that, as George was saying, the league is doing more. Everyone's doing more. And by doing more, obviously, will allow more kids to play. And I think that, you know, along with those guys, it's a matter of time. I don't know if five will ever be on a team, but I think there's more and more kids that will wind up playing. And what I like to see too is, you know, George and I were, I don't want to say we're like one dimensional, but, you know, the kids that I see coming in are skilled. Like they're, yeah, you know, they're highly skilled, and that's what I like to see, you know, like a Ginla, you know, where, you know, he could do it all, you know, and that's something that makes me proud, because George and I were, you know, pretty much, you know, we had a similar role on a team. But when I see the kids that are coming in the league now that are putting up points and scoring goals, and, you know, that's something that makes me proud for sure.
Yeah, that's right.
How are you guys enjoying the return to play? You know, George, you're still doing radio, still doing the whole hockey talk. But from what you see, you know, how are you liking it? And, you know, at the beginning of the season, Elijah, Akil, and myself, we had our predictions. And, of course, Akil picked L.A. Kings, and Elijah picked Las Vegas, and I picked Toronto. And I think the old guy Kwame is doing the best right now.
sorry to interrupt you, Kwame, but if you go look at the standings, Vegas has played less games in Toronto with better winning.
But who's looking the best right now out of all the teams right now? Is my pick looking better than any? Akil, LA. Don't even talk.
LA.
Don't,
yeah.
You got nothing. You have no leg to stand on right now. but from you guys, what are you guys thinking about the return to play? How are you guys liking what the NHL is doing right now?
God, I wish I could help you out, man. But with this new North Division, I have a tough time paying attention to anything down south. I'm fully invested in this. In like, we all played in a time when you were playing against the same team over and over and over again, and those rivalries, you can see that it's really heating up now, I think. And I think you're right. I like the Leafs. They do look good, but let's face it, man, it doesn't matter what they doesn't matter what they do. It matters in a few months in the playoffs and how, what happens then, right? They could win the rest of the games going out, and they don't get past that first round, it's a bust.
George, from your vantage point as an analyst, what are you thinking right now? How are you liking your hometown Montreal Canadiens?
Well, you know, they're lucky. Montreal is so lucky that COVID saved their season last year, because of COVID, they made it to the playoff. And because of what they did in the playoff, they surprised everyone. That's what pushed Bergevin to have some key players to go for it this year. So, yeah, they should be they should finish in the top first two, the first two in the division and North Division. I'm kind of sick of seeing the same team they're playing over and over again. But in this COVID area, it's better than nothing.
Yeah,
I think they have a good chance to make it far. I think they could come out of the North Division in the best of seven. I think the Montreal is better built in the best of seven series to beat Toronto than vice versa. So, but we'll see with injuries and everything. We'll see what team is going to be able to stay healthy.
Shano, like I said, Akil Thomas he's got his money all in with the LA Kings. Have you had a chance to watch what they're doing? And what are your thoughts? And Akil, if you want to jump in and just kind of give your two cents, that's it's totally
he cool. Doesn't have 2 cents if he put all his money in. What are you talking about?
You know what? I'm growing up in Toronto or just outside of Toronto, I'm a big Leafs fan. So my teams are the Oilers and the Leafs, and they have so much pressure on them. The Leafs do. But you can't deny how fun and entertaining they are to watch. And with the way today's game is and, you know, how tight the refs call the game and with, you know, you're not allowed to basically touch anyone. So you got that type of skill and they have the defense that they have and their ability, you know, to interchange and cycle in the offensive zone. They're such a fun team for me to watch with all that skill. And obviously being an Oiler, former Oiler and living here, you know, and being able to watch probably the best player in the league, Connor McDavid, you know, he makes it fun. So I'm just happy that I don't really have a team. I'm still a fan of the game. But I more than anything, I'm just happy with all the lockdown and the inability to do anything that hockey's on. And we have a chance I actually watch it more now than I've ever watched it before, just because there's nothing else to do.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is great, guys. Black History Month is upon us. And I wanted to make sure that we celebrated you guys all together. I wish all five of you guys could have been here together on the show just to kind of reminisce. But I think the three of you have contributed enough for us to let the people know how much of a great time that was. And we thank you for your service. And thank you for, you know, being a part of that history. And, you know, as Black History Month starts to wrap up, we have to understand that our history is what helps us going forward. And as these my two young nephews, Akil and Elijah, they need to see the OGs, man. And we appreciate you guys doing this with us. But before we go, George knows what we do. We have a top five. We have five songs that, you know, our guests listen to, you know, before they get on the ice. Now it's three of you guys, so we're going to divide it up. George, you've already done this, so I'm going to give you George one song. Joaquin, Gage, and Sean, you're going to get two each. So let's take it back to those days with the Edmontons when you guys were holding it down and nobody else can touch the CD player. What are the five songs you're going to play to get the room amped up? Joaquin, we'll start with your first two.
First two, geez. Let's go Big Pimpin' with some Jay-Z. And then how about oh God, you're putting me on the spot here. There's two. I might have to go. Let's go way back to when I was a kid. We'll Blame It on the Rain with a little Milli Vanilli. It's fake, I know, but something I can listen to.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong. That's a good song.
Okay. Sean, give me two.
Jesus, I'm on the spot too. I don't know. Like, I kind of like that Notorious B.I.G. Hypnotize.
Okay.
That's an oldie but a goodie. And I can't think of the one right now. It's Jesus. I listen to it all the time with my kid, but I can't even. It's by Dre. I can't even think of what it is.
Dr. Dre? So him and Eminem, maybe Forgot About Dre, maybe Still Dre.
Yeah. You know what? I'll go. Actually, now that you bring it up, we used to listen in Boston. That was one of our songs that we played when we won was Eminem. What was that? Is it 8 Mile or?
8 Mile.
Yeah. Yeah. that was, I'll go with him. He was always, that was always so fun.
Little Lose Yourself. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I'll go with that.
All right. So there's four songs. You guys are just about to go on the ice. You got like 4 minutes left. Big George, you are holding it down. What's the CD you're going to throw on and what's the song?
DDD Victory, man.
There it is.
Victory.
Yeah. Yeah. That gets everybody fired up. Elijah, Akil, I'm going to let you guys ring it out with the boys and let them go.
Well, I know as we speak right now, Akil's going and Googling all five of those songs, but thanks for coming on and, you know, giving us a little history lesson, letting us know where it all started. You know, before I was playing summer hockey with five black players on my team, you know, you got to think that's inspired by what our parents saw with you guys playing on Edmonton. So thank you for that.
Thank you guys. Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
I just can't get over you guys bringing CDs to the rink.
Yeah. I remember Greerzy pulling a bunch out of his bag. It was hilarious. Yeah. It was awesome.
The good old CD bag.
The old CD bag, man. Cracked cases. You know, I had to fit it back on there so it didn't get scratched.
It's crazy how things change like that. But no, thanks for coming on. And hopefully maybe one day I can be a part of something like what you guys kind of accomplished.
I hope so, buddy. Good luck with everything.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Once again, that was Big George the Rock, Joaquin Gage, Sean Brown holding it down for the Edmonton Oilers, representing 20 years ago, boys. Five black players on one team. And that was like 2000-2001 season. And then in 2005, there was five black players on the Atlanta Thrashers. Thoughts, Akil?
Yeah, really cool. I mean, like, I found it kind of surprising that, you know, the idea of having five black players wasn't really like on their mind. Like for me, like that would be like so cool. And I would notice it. I would feel it every day at the rink, you know, like going to the rink with Boko and Q, like I feel it every day. Like if one of them didn't show up one day, like I would notice, you know what I mean? Just the little jokes we have and just the little chirps we give at each other. It's just, you know, stuff that, you know, other people can't really relate to. So
not that you guys are trying to make yourselves different from everybody else, but do you find that you guys got this little click together?
Oh, I mean, for sure a little bit, just because like it's tough times right now. All of our heads are looking just awful. So we just chirp each other about our hair and we obviously have to go to the same person. Right. So we've been trying to get a hold of that. Hopefully we can make someone work soon, but I mean, definitely have, you know, a little bit more in common with each other for sure, but it's all jokes when we come to the rink and, you know, it's awesome.
Qualms, I think, before I comment on that, I think Akil's trying to make sure that I don't get a job anywhere trying to say that show up to the rink 2 minutes before Skittles and all that. You know, I think if Berkey or some other GMs listening, they might be going up to that and putting a big X. So maybe Akil to just stay three black guys in LA, but
that's true or false. True or false. Did you run out of gas on the way home from the rink once?
On the way home, yes, I did.
I thought how did it even work?
You're telling me you've never been in your car before and you're just like, man, this whole thing. I just want to get home. I'll get the gas after.
I've been close for sure, but definitely like when I'm now, if I'm at like quarter, I just go. Like, no, I remember you and stuff. Like, I remember I'd have to drive your car somewhere or something, us doing our stuff, whatever. I'd get in your car, and every time there's like 13 kilometers, or it's like 11.5 kilometers to the place I'm going to. And it's like, Lige, if I run out of gas with your car, I'm going to kill you, man.
You're going to leave it on the side of the road.
Yes.
Well, listen, man, I thought that was really cool. And like, Elijah, you've played on summer leagues, like you said, with multiple black players. And
we have a group chat that the one Akil was talking about, like that's solely because of like, like the summer hockey that we played before. And originally, like, Akil wasn't in that group chat because he didn't play on the team. Right. But it just became, it was five Black hockey players, and then we just started expanding to like other Black hockey players. And now, like, every single day we all text in that chat, like, a lot. And that all started with being able to all play together.
And you know what's interesting? Sorry, go ahead.
I run like the group chat. I'm like the king of it. So
you're the one who sets the tone.
I'm the OG. Yeah, I'm the OG.
Okay, but you know what's really cool about that group, and I hope you guys keep that group really tight, because you know not everybody's going to play in the National Hockey League, but every one of you has an ability to make a mark in the world of hockey. And if you guys put your heads together, get out of school, do whatever you got to do. Some will play in the NHL. Some may be working in the head office. Some may be GM. Some may be coaches. Who knows what it is? And you guys will look back at this day and say to yourselves, man, it's really cool to have this bond. And, you know, that's a bond that you'll have for the rest of your life, and a bond that a lot of guys of color never really ever had. So you guys are in a great place in this world. So
this might sound a little bit cheesy, but I feel like everyone in the group chat kind of understands that and knows that. So whenever like one of us kind of does something cool or whatever, like, it's always in the group chat. We're always big up in each other and pushing each other to be better and stuff. So that's something.
When Akil tries to say anything, everyone goes, Akil, you're a 2000. No one wants to hear it. He's the youngest in the group. So
is he?
He thinks he runs a group, but we all know we don't want to hear from no 2000.
The youngest.
You know I run the group. Don't worry. You know
you run things.
Maybe we'll get some of them on the show one time.
We're gonna have to get those guys on the show, and then we can figure out who's running what. And with that being said, thank you very much. Make sure you check us out on all social media platforms. Brother B holding it down. Stay warm in Texas. I cannot believe that he's got like 20 hoodies on, and it's only +5. So thank you very much for listening to us. We'll be back again next week. And for Elijah and Akil, my name is Kwame. We're out. Bong, bong.
And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you like you need me. I need you like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through. Yeah. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. You goddamn right, I'm screaming on that beat. I got a match screaming on the streets. We in the club, stadium, and the arena, cousin. Put me on ice and I'm hitting that top. Trees are dusting, fussing, fighting with myself is enticing. My enemies in the mirror, and he's always reciting the poetry of my power. Statistic of my weakness, shadow boxing with Tyson. I'm trying to show y'all I'm beating them to the punch. Competition on the table, it's time for lunch. Though my mission is unstable, I'm scoring once, twice, three times, and I'm taking hats. Men lie, women lie, progress is based upon the facts. So let that baby shine. They sold a show and older, they live within the grind. Now take them out that stroller, cause coming up is a champ. Prediction of Ali, he changed his name to Muhammad. We changing free to a fee, it's up to me. And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you like you need me. I need you like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. Let's dedicate this one to Jaden Linda. Let's escalate to Caddy, crush the Pinta. Or maybe you prefer that Benz. Why? That big truck, I don't give a f***. Only really want a house for the kid. Let's take it far down on the competition. Competition is nonsense, it's me and my soul's decision. Yeah, I only work against myself. I play against you to bench you. I'm throwing all shots to the shelf. Yeah, the top is the topic. You checking your armor. My wheel telescopic, so I'm steering my karma. The future is mine, like receiving the past from Jesus or Jordan or Crosby, Stills and Nash. We young, and when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the proof is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you like you need me. I need you like you need me.
soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. Nice.